Hey everybody, this is the Brew Shaman for Crafted For You. Tonight with me, as always, we have my executive producer.
Hi, it's Alyssa.
And my co-host, Chris.
How you guys doing?
Tonight, we are at a Prior Brewing Company. Calder here, it was gracious enough to have us.
Hi, I'm Calder Pryor. I'm the brewer and president at Prior Brewing Company in Greensboro, North Carolina. Obviously, that's where we are.
So we'll just get right into it. As you heard from the last episode, if you did listen to it, you should listen to it. We talked a lot about homebrewing, and I know that is a lot of your background, and that's kind of where you started.
Absolutely. I actually listened to that episode today. It's a good episode, and I love talking about homebrew. I spent 10 years brewing beer at home before we opened this brewery, and I spent 6 years of that working at a homebrew store, this season gardening company, so I was very into the homebrew. And even though I worked in a retail store, I didn't necessarily talk about the homebrew very much, because when you're a homebrewer, it can be a very introverted activity too, where you're like, I'm just at home making my beer and
making
my beer for myself, and sometimes I share it with my friends, but I don't know. It's fun to sit down and talk about homebrew and how it led me to my career as much as it is right now.
I'm sure, like, when people came in, you got to talk a lot about homebrewing.
You talk a lot about homebrew, for sure, and sometimes, as a person working in a homebrew store, it can be hard to keep your opinion to yourself, because I was very much of the opinion that people needed to make these mistakes on their own to learn from them.
Oh, definitely.
Sometimes someone will come in and be like, here's my grain bill. You're like, oh, are you stocking up on specialty malt? No, my grain bill is 10 pounds of caramel 20. And you're like, I don't think that's going to turn out very good, but, you know, I'll let you brew that beer and you can come back and tell me why you think that wasn't a great beer to be brewing.
You also don't want to second guess people's creative choices.
Exactly. So that maybe they'll hit on something that's wonderful.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the things that turned me a little more inward in my home brewing was people telling you, like, that's not what you do. Like,
right.
They have very regimented ways that they think about homebrewing, and some people do, and that's not a very fun thing for someone to tell you. Or, like, you go in with a recipe, and the guy getting it together for you starts trying to make changes to it, and you're like, no, that's what I want to brew. Like, maybe it's a terrible idea. Maybe I shouldn't put that in this beer, but
I want to play around with it.
It's my 5 gallons of beer at home maybe I'll dump it down the drain, but you don't have to drink any, so,
Yeah, you want to be experimental. That's the cool thing about homebrewing. Yeah. And you don't want somebody to be like, no, you probably shouldn't do that.
But yeah, so these are my choices.
Yeah.
This is my home.
I like a really malty beer.
And still one of the things we have the most fun with is tossing around crazy ideas for beers that would never work, or like just things that maybe we'll do a 5 or 10 gallon batch of here and see what it does, but you know, we wouldn't ever dream of trying to market a beer like that and sell it to people. But
that's a cool thing about having like a big brewery and then having like a little pilot batch.
Yeah.
You get to experiment a lot.
And so that's definitely a part that I miss about home brewing too, is brewing with low stakes.
Yeah.
So it's like I can make this 5 or 10 gallon batch and it doesn't matter. Like, this beer could be terrible and I'll dump it down the drain.
Yeah,
and I'm out, what, $30-$40 if it's an all-grain batch, so who cares? That's, you know, I'll do something weird.
Are you still homebrewing?
No.
No.
Absolutely not. I brought all my homebrew stuff here. That is a work thing now. Like, I still love, like, I brewed a 10-gallon batch today, and it was great to be brewing a batch of beer that, like I said, low stakes, like, I'm trying to develop a new recipe, but it's not like something goes wrong with this, I'm out a few thousand dollars and my brewing schedule's all screwed up and we don't have beer in the, you know, kegs that we need, you know.
Right.
We're not, our production schedule's not messed up, you know. It's like, if this batch is screwed up, who cares? I'll brew another 10-gallon batch next week. Try and do a 10-gallon batch every week.
That's awesome. So, do you guys have like a special tap for that if you actually do put it on?
We are going to. We're going to start doing it every Thursday night. We're going to put on a test batch every Thursday.
Cool.
Either, I think it's going to start next Thursday with a Goza.
Nice.
We love Gozas.
We just brewed a Goza too.
I'm not a big sour beer guy, but it's something that I've been getting a lot of push from my brother who does our sales. I work with my two brothers here, my wife. My older brother does sales, and he is really into sour beers and weird stuff like that, and my compromise was starting with a Goza, which is something that I like, you know, I'm like, and it's not, you know, it's just lactobacillus, Like, it's
I was
going
to ask
like,
you how you were going to do it.
We messed around with kettle souring and stuff and just couldn't get to something that we were consistently happy with. So it's pretty much just we're pitching Lactobacillus delbrueckii with the American ale yeast we're using for that. A little bit of salt and coriander, you know.
Yep.
Goes as a pretty simple batch, too. So that's another part that's appealing about it, to get into sort of funkier sour beers. It's like, this is a really cheap beer to brew. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Pils malt, wheat malt, coriander, sea salt, like, tiniest amount of hops, you know, 10 IBUs or something. So even if you get to the point where you're happy with a 10-gallon batch and you scale it up, like, if that first 10-barrel batch doesn't hit, like, you're not crying as that goes down the drain.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
You're not like, oh, that was 30 pounds of hops.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Do you find that homebrewers are coming in to kind of seek you out for advice?
I still go by Fifth Season a lot and talk to them, and I still see some customers who come in from Fifth Season who come here and drink, and I'll talk to them, but it's been hard because, like, you know, when you're starting your own business, like, I don't just make work. Like, I come in and I also do, like, accounting or, like, you know, had a conversation with our bar manager today about, like, HR kind of stuff and
right.
stuff like that. So it's not like, it'd be a lot easier to be more available for stuff like that if all I was doing was, you know, even if I was doing everything in the brewery like I'm doing now, if I could just nix all the office work type stuff, like,
right.
it'd be a lot easier to have time for stuff like that. But, like, it's been hard.
That eats up most
yeah,
of
my
your
life's,
time.
Yeah, my life's been kind of a total, it's just been a black hole of time for probably since about a year ago. I think our tanks were maybe delivered a year ago, close to a year ago today.
Cool.
We put those tanks in there, so.
And how many tanks do you have?
It's 5 fermenters and 4 bright tanks, and then a you know HLT mash tun and boil kettle.
That's a hot liquor tank.
Yeah,
for people who don't know.
I'll go into my giving a brewery tour mode. We call liquor the water we use in the brewing process. It's called liquor. Yeah.
About this on a podcast, yeah. And I probably confuse everyone.
Yeah.
There's no liquor in there. It's water.
It's our hot liquor tank, hot water tank. So yeah, we got. What? Do the math. 12? 13 tanks? 12 tanks. 13. Yeah. 13 tanks.
So how many batches are you doing a day? Maybe 1 or 2?
Not even that much right now. I mean, we're on pace to do about 1,000 barrels in our first year, which is what we were wanting to do. So, you know, brewing 10-barrel batches, that's like 2 a week.
Okay.
If we consider 50 week brewing weeks in the year, you know, maybe we'll take 2 weeks off. But 2 batches a week, 10-barrel batches, that'll get us to 1,000 barrels, and that's about what we were on pace for, and that's about what we were planning to do. We were hoping to do between 750 and 1250 in year one, so we're like kind of right in the middle.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great.
So you were at Fifth Season, when did you kind of see, like, man, I should just...
Well,
kind of start my own brewery. Like, make.
I started brewing beer when I was 21 because I went to the Czech. I was backpacking through Europe with my friend because I didn't know what the hell I wanted to do with my life. I started college, was doing like computer engineering type stuff, and I had my first job in a cubicle and was like, "This isn't." I had my first job in a cubicle one summer and was like, "This is not. I can't do this. Like, this isn't what I'm going to do." And I dropped out of school. Didn't know what I was going to do with my life. Went to Europe with my friend and was going through the Czech Republic, and there's all sorts of delicious tiny breweries, you know, in every little town there. And so I was like, this is pretty cool. Like, I could do this. I should start a brewery. And it was my friend David Clemens, and our original joke was we're going to start a brewery and call it CNC Brewing Factory. Like, yeah, and maybe we'll have a CNC. He's actually a bartender here now.
Okay.
So... I just started homebrewing when I got home from that because I was like, well, you can't start a brewery if you don't know how to brew beer. So
right.
I'll start homebrewing. You know, I got a Charlie Papazian book and homebrew kit and just started making extract batches. I just bought a house out in Summerfield and just was brewing beer a lot, like once a week would brew a 5-gallon batch, and eventually moved on to all grain. And I got a job at Fifth Season as more of like a... The job I was working at the time was pretty boring, and my wife went in there for some gardening stuff and was like, hey, you know, they're starting to carry homebrew supplies, you should go get a job there. And I went over there and got a job, and I worked there for 6 years as like the homebrew guy in Greensboro. And I started Siebel like 2012, I think. So when I did Siebel, yeah, 2012. So 4 years ago now. And that was when it started getting really serious, and we like doing a business plan and stuff like that, and started looking at real estate and all that fun stuff. So I guess it's probably been about, I was brewing beer for 6 years, I guess, before we really got super serious about it.
So you started brewing beer with the intention of opening a brewery.
I mean,
indefinitely.
With the intention
of
21-year-old guy who just drinks beer
all
the time. Doesn't know what he wants to do with his life, right. You know, with the intention of opening a brewery.
Well, you followed through with it, so.
Yeah, eventually. It's because, eventually you put so many years into it, you're like, well, shit, I kind of have to now. Like, what else am I going to do? I'm 26 and I've got a brewing education, but
right.
Don't have a college degree otherwise, so I guess I kind of have to go for this.
Yeah.
So.
Are any of the recipes you use now, do they like trickle back to your early homebrew days?
Or? The two closest ones right now are probably the red IPA and the vanilla porter. I used to brew a vanilla porter a lot, and I used to brew, you know, Imperial Red Ale or red IPA or whatever, you know, a lot too, because I liked really hoppy beers that had more of a body to them that weren't super dry and had a little bit of sweetness. Like, I think, if I remember correctly, the beer that I was drinking a lot of that I wanted to start brewing a hoppy red ale was Rogue used to have one. I can't remember the name of it, like St. Rogue's Imperial Red Ale or something like that. So it was something from Rogue. And so the two right now that we have on tap are definitely the red IPA and the vanilla porter. And actually, keep forgetting we put this beer out a week ago. The Pepinero Pale Ale. That's like another homebrew recipe I used to do, is like just a real light touch of habanero in it, just for some pepper flavor and a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of heat. So those three beers are the ones that are the most like
straight out of homebrew.
I like a good, I like, you went away from like, because usually when you do habanero, it's usually like a stout, so you have the spicy and sweet, but you went more the pale ale where you get the hops.
Well, it's like the habanero Sculpin, but like that's super heavy on the pepper, you know? And it's not like, I don't know, we get feedback sometimes on like our vanilla porter or the pepper beer that they're like, it doesn't taste enough like X. And you're like, well, that was, you know. But I get that's a complaint for you, but I'm taking it as a compliment because that's what I was going for.
Absolutely.
And there's going for a balanced beer.
There's so many beers on the market that
just
are like
super extreme.
Absolutely. And being able to kind of balance out that flavor profile and just get that hint of it to kind of just like rest on your tongue as opposed to,
at the same time,
grab a glass of milk after your beer.
At the same time, like talking about the difference between homebrew and brewing professionally. I talk about the homebrew being low stakes. Like, if that's the consumer's feedback, and like, even if I'm like, well, that's what I was going for. If most people think that, like, who cares what I was going for?
Right.
People that are buying it,
selling,
want something else. So you know.
So do you take that advice or what they say?
I mean, that's the first. Well, see, the thing about the Pepinero is like we can do like Pepinero XL, Pepinero XXL. Like we can bump up the heat.
Yeah.
It's like different beers too, like
it's a good idea,
you know, so you can kind of brew more of it and have three of them on tap at once if you want. So
and have just different levels.
That's the good part about owning your brewery, is like I can do whatever I want, really. I don't have production schedules besides the ones that I make, where I'm like, this is what I want to do. We spend a lot of time talking about new beers though, where it's like I said, my brother does sales. He's saying, people are telling me they want to try this from us, or like, stuff like that. Like, our bartenders are like, I love this beer, we should brew some beer like this, you know? So, it's not solely, like, decreed from on high for me. Like, in reality, I haven't really picked too many of the new beers that we've done. A lot of them is the art of compromise of like, you say you want to do this, let's do it together.
Yeah.
Like our Belgian session IPA was, our bar manager Nick really wanted a session IPA. My brother wanted to do something else with the Abbey ale yeast that he used. So I said,
there you go.
We're going to do a Belgian session IPA.
Yeah.
So there you go. You're both satisfied.
Well, that seems like a good way to sort of develop styles that aren't being met other places, and also kind of like expand your skill set as a brewer.
Or just do something just a little bit different. Like, I mean, there's 4,000 breweries in the country. Like, it's really hard to think of something wholly original at this point.
Yeah.
But, like, if you can do a little bit of a twist to something, like, you know, use your Abbey Ale yeast on a session IPA, like, that helps a lot. Especially, you know, we're a small brewery that only distributes locally, so.
Yeah.
That also enters into the picture of, like, what is other people, what are other people doing locally? Because we don't necessarily want to do the same thing, you know, that everyone else is doing. Like, people had been there's a lot of people are asking me to brew an ESB, and I'm like, Pig Pounder and Gibbs both brew good ESBs, like, why do we want to be, you know, third or fourth breweries in town doing an ESB?
Do you guys try to find the balance between what people prefer to drink locally and things that aren't being covered locally, or are you trying to find maybe more of that niche spot? Or
I think we more just pretty much talk about what we want to try to brew next. I mean, we don't really try to hit too much in terms of, like, and when it comes into the picture of what other people are doing locally, it's more of like, they're already doing this, we don't need to be doing that.
We don't want to be oversaturated.
We're not, like, looking for holes in the profiles that are being met locally, but it's more of like, now they're already doing a pretty good one of those. Right. Let's not, why bother?
Yeah.
But when it comes to stuff like IPAs and things like that, like, everyone can't get enough of IPAs.
Yeah,
so, like,
absolutely.
Beer drinkers are IPA crazy. One. So, yeah, like, having four IPAs on tap isn't a problem. Like, no one ever comes in as like, why do you have four IPAs?
Right. Yeah.
You know? So, it's more like hell yeah.
Which one do I choose?
Oh, no, for the longest time, all we had, for the first few months, all we had was the red IPA, and all we heard was, when are you going to brew a regular IPA? So, I joked around about doing something like Foothills of the IPA of the month, you know? But doing 12 different IPAs in a row, and none of them like a regular West Coast style IPA. Like, we'll just do a whole series that's not a West Coast IPA. After people were complaining so much about that,
keeps getting them in the door. Yeah. And they're like,
it's
still not.
It's still not a glass of hop juice. Like, that's what I'm drinking is IPA. So
yeah, I think that's a trend that will stay around for a long time.
This is my first beer. This is fantastic, by the way.
Thank you.
I'm really enjoying this.
The Cranberry IPA. Crunkberry.
I think I got switched. So I'm not entirely sure. That's the Belgian.
Oh, the Belgian.
The Belgian. Okay. Yeah.
Fisher Park. Awesome. Yeah, we named that after our neighborhood.
Nice.
Trying to get a little bit of a local flair.
Yeah.
It's always good.
When you're a little guy, you have to emphasize the local, so.
Yeah, well, I had the Cranberry IPA like 3 weeks ago, and I like fell in love with it. It was so good, and I love that it's not overly sweet. It has that tartness.
Yeah, the pH dropped pretty hard from the cranberries. We 90 pounds of cranberries is all it took for a 10-barrel batch. So I mean, sounds like a lot, but it's really not. I mean, what, nine pounds per? Sorry. My brain is not working. 9 pounds per 9 pounds per barrel. Sorry. And yeah, it's not that much, really.
Did you guys brew that with like the intention of that kind of being like a holiday beer?
It was the intention, but we have enough cranberries to brew another batch, so we might. I don't know. I think it's pretty good, and we released it the week before Thanksgiving. Is like, here's like a holiday kind of beer that's not pumpkin.
Yeah, that's not spicy. Yes.
Well, we did a pumpkin beer, and that was the one I fought hard against, but was like, all right, fine, you're right.
People like their pumpkin.
Everybody does it. Yeah,
that was the worst brew day I've had.
Really?
Pumpkin beer. It was
your mash terrible.
17 hours for a 10-barrel batch.
Oh
my
god!
It took me 10 hours to louder it. So.
Oh my god!
It was an imperial oatmeal stout. So there was flaked oats in it. There was 80 pounds of roasted pumpkin, which we got local, like, organic North Carolina pumpkin, which we try to use like real fruit whenever we do, or vegetables whenever we do.
Right.
Bannon beers. And so it was like 1,000 pounds in the mash tun. Like, our mash tun was,
holy crap,
completely loaded up for a 10-barrel batch, and just the ladder was a total nightmare. It got stuck so many different times.
Oh, I'm sure. Even on like a homebrew scale, I know that's a pain in the ass.
You're just imagining.
That's why I don't do them anymore. I stopped doing pumpkin beers.
And we used a little bit of cinnamon and nutmeg, because that was my thing, was like,
you don't want to be a spice bum.
That's what a lot of pumpkin beers are, and that was just like,
it's getting to the point where you can't even taste the pumpkin in pumpkin
beer. Yeah, it just tastes like spice.
Well,
we had to do a lot of convincing of people to try it too, and we got a really good response from that beer where they'd be like, "Oh, it's a pumpkin imperial stout." Like, I've had, you know, blank beer. I don't want to name and shame, because, you know, well, whatever. Southern Tier doesn't care that I think their pumpkin beers are terrible. but it just tastes like a glass of cinnamon and nutmeg, you know, and like we used a tiny, tiny amount. We've got one keg of that we're holding on to until March.
So how long have you guys been open to the public?
May 8th, so it's been like 8 months now.
Okay.
Yeah, 8 months as of a couple days ago. Yeah. We started brewing April 4th.
Okay.
First batch of beer we brewed was Lunsford Robust Porter. And we named it Lunsford Robust Porter. It's after my granddad, who was Lunsford Richardson Pryor, so it was LRP. I was like, well, this is a robust porter. We can call it Lunsford. Then it's LRP. And we named it that because we realized we were brewing on the anniversary of his death.
Oh, so wow.
We
were
like,
wow.
Oh, yeah. My granddad died 11 years ago today, so we're going to name this after him. And our family cemetery is like literally... My family has a cemetery plot that's like, you know, y'all parked next to it if y'all parked at the daycare, basically. Right. It's the corner of Green Hill Cemetery right there. We were, almost literally as close as we could possibly be to where he was buried. Wow. So we were like, oh, we're going to name it Lunsford.
Did you guys have to dump any batches on your first go-through?
The Lunsford Robust Porter that we released that, the very first batch we brewed on there, I mean, I did like... water through it and stuff just to make sure everything was working right, but that was the first batch we brewed and it turned out fine.
Nice.
I've had to dump one batch.
that's not too bad.
And that was because of stuck mash. Like, we have a rye pale ale that's not on tap right now. We're going to brew it again in the spring, but it's 20% rye and I got I just had a day of just terrible stuck mashes and I finally got enough and run off into the kettle to boil and was like, you know, I had to use some very not good methods for the gravity, the efficiency of the mash to get it unstuck. I'm going to take a pre-boil gravity before I waste the rest of my night.
Yeah.
And the gravity was so low that I just, it would not anywhere close to what we needed it to be. So that got dumped down the drain. But that's the only one that we've dumped.
That's not bad. That's a really hard one to do. That much rye?
Yeah, I mean... That was the second time. The first time I brewed it, it was totally fine and perfect, and that was the second time I brewed it, and it was a disaster, but it's been fine every time since, but we hadn't brewed it since last summer. Yeah, not brewing a rye pale ale right now. We got plenty of other beers to cover the light, hoppy sort of range, so. Yeah.
So has anything else, like, gone awry with your brewery? Like, anything, like, break, or...
Things break all the time. Pretty much, I spend all my time fixing things just about. If a week goes by without something breaking, I'm happy. Like, keg washer was broken. I had to take apart the entire thing. It took me, you know, 8-10 hours to take it apart, figure out what was wrong with it. And it was a hole in a solenoid diaphragm that was like, you know, maybe the size of a pinhead. So, and that was all making it not drain properly. So we were having kegs that were still full of caustic and not draining, all because that little solenoid diaphragm wasn't the integrity of it was, yeah. And so, like, I also brewed a 20-barrel batch one day. Our very first time we used our 20-barrel fermenter, I cranked out like a 20-hour day. Just, it was not a very fun day. It didn't go very smoothly. But it happened, and it was in the fermenter, and we came in the next morning, and the beer that should have been fermenting away happily at 67 degrees was 38 degrees because a glycol solenoid was stuck open and was just running, you know, 10-degree glycol through the jackets all night, so we had to shut the valves off and wait for it to rise up, and it took 4 days to actually start fermenting, but it turned out fine and didn't have to dump it. Let's see. Solenoids short out all the time, so it's pretty much always I've got a solenoid coil fix. Or one time, it was actually the weekend the National Folk Festival was in town here in Greensboro. I was pretty excited about, you know, something fun to do, take my daughter to go see the Folk Festival, but our glycol chiller stopped working, and obviously that's a big deal. Yeah. We had 4 of our 5 fermenters full of beer, all 4 bright tanks full of beer. We had 8 batches going through the cellar at that time, and all their temperatures are just slowly going up because the glycol chiller isn't working right. So I spent 2 straight days here, probably 18 hours each day trying to fix it. It turned out to be as simple as the way that our chiller is on the roof and the way that it was designed, water was getting into the glycol reservoir. So our freezing point that was supposed to be -7 was slowly rising to the point that the glycol was just freezing through the refrigeration loop. It was as simple as that.
Yeah.
All I had to do was add some glycol to it. And yeah, the reason it took me all weekend to figure that out is because we had a miscalibrated instrument that we, the very first thing we did was measure the gravity of the glycol, but make sure your instruments are calibrated before you actually trust them to tell you what something's wrong. So I was finally like, you know what, let's try this out on a different, you know, let's try a different instrument and tell us what the gravity is. Sure enough,
Feel like a lot of those things are just kind of like startup pains, or are you finding like most of the startup stuff happened pretty fluidly and you're just dealing with kind of like maintenance stuff? Or?
I mean, it's a little bit of both. In some cases, most of the startup pain stuff is just like, you don't necessarily have the money to get the equipment you want. Right. You have to get the equipment you can afford. So you're like, you know, this might not be the nicest thing in the world, but this is what we have and we have to make it work. But then like in terms of maintenance, it's just, you know, we've been brewing for 9 months now, so things are going to break.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're doing quarterly maintenance on things, that's three quarters worth of maintenance. So things are just going to break and that's the way it is. But when you're the only person up in the brewery, like, it wasn't like, oh, I can deal with this on Monday. Like, no, on Monday we might have, you know, thousands of dollars worth of beer that's got to go down the drain.
Yeah.
So this has got to go now.
So what was your opening weekend like for you personally? Because we heard all about the hype and we drove by and this whole area was packed and people couldn't get enough of you guys.
Well, opening weekend was a little crazy. Now I don't really spend much time in the tap room in terms of working behind the bar, but that night, we opened on a Friday night. We had done some like private like soft open kind of things, like friends and family come over here, we're going to charge you 50 cents a beer so we can test out point of sale and stuff like that. But like Friday, our capacity here is 147. I think we were cutting it off at 130. And we were at capacity like all weekend.
Oh, wow.
And I was behind the bar that night, and basically all I was doing was taking empty kegs and grabbing kegs and running the dishwasher. I would put a rack of glasses in there, hit the button, and take them out. And I was pretty much constantly doing that all night. We had, like I said, we opened at 4, we hit capacity at 4:30, and we were at capacity until 1:30.
Holy crap.
So wow. I'm pretty sure our bar manager finished his closing up at 4:30 in the morning and went to sleep on the couch because we were opening at noon. So our bar manager, Nick, y'all should all come say hi to him. He's amazing. He's the best investment we've made. And Nick is awesome. He's my brother's, he was my younger brother's randomly assigned roommate at UNCW.
Okay.
And that's how we knew him, and we gave him the job, and he's done an awesome job. But man, opening weekend, my wife was here working behind the bar. I was here working behind the bar. My brothers were here working behind the bar that weekend, and none of us work behind the bar anymore. We used to rotate Tuesdays. We were the bar managers. We don't do that anymore. Just a total whirlwind. I can barely remember any of it. It was just a bunch of, you know, people come in here, but hey, congratulations. I'm like, I can't talk right now. I'm like, I really can't talk to you right now. I'm not trying to be a dick, but I'm way too busy. But I pretty much just remember seeing the inside of our walk-in cooler a lot.
That's not a bad problem to have.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird thing to say, but we only opened with 3 beers. Like, the way the craft beer industry was when I first got into it and was like, I want to open a brewery, that would have been something people were impressed by. Like, you've got 3 beers on opening day. Yeah. But then, like, people are going to try your 3 beers and be like, well, what's next? You know, it's like, well, we're a small brewery. Like, you know, what are you expecting from us? You know, we're not going to come out of the gate with like 12 different beers, but like now I think we put out 18 different beers since then.
That's awesome.
Wow. Yeah. That's a quick growth too.
It just turns out that's what you have to do now. Yeah. Like, people always want to know what's new from you. Like, they're like, oh, your red IPA is great, I love it, but what are you doing now? We're still doing that red IPA. You should come drink some more of it. But yeah,
more you drink, the faster I can make something else.
Yeah, but we've probably tweaked what we're looking for in terms of our beer lineup since then. I mean, we're doing more new beers more frequently instead of just like, here's the 6 beers we have, or whatever.
Right.
But I'm glad to have the opening weekend behind us. It was more, the opening weekend was kind of a really insane release and catharsis from like months worth of like I said earlier, we got these tanks about a year ago today. So January, we got our tanks installed. We started doing the final equipment install. I started brewing beer in April. And then, like, you know, you brew a batch of beer April 4th, it's pretty much ready. In the case of a porter, it's pretty much ready, like, April 18th. Mm-hmm. So, like, a couple weeks later, we're finally open. And that was the culmination of, even if you just want to look at the microcosm of, like, from when we signed a lease on this building and started construction, like, the construction process was way more stressful and a lot more work than we really anticipated. Well, not necessarily work, but way more stressful than we anticipated it being. So
it's gorgeous in here, yeah, by the way.
Thanks.
Yeah, this is. I really like the atmosphere in here. I like the wood on the walls. It's
the wood over there on the walls is from like an old family tobacco barn that my brother took apart.
That's awesome.
That's really cool.
And
cool.
We built our flight boards out of them too.
That's cool.
And like some of the menu board stuff up there.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, it's not all that wood, but all the stuff on that wall. And the trim and like some of the stuff on the ramp and stuff like that. It's all from the old tobacco barns that my brother took apart.
And for our listeners who don't know, your bar and brewery is actually connected to a restaurant, which we can see just through these windows right here.
Yeah. Crafted the Art of Street Food.
Yeah. They also have another one on Elm Street, which is the Art of the Taco. So how did that whole relationship actually come to...
Well, the reason we ended up in this building, so we spent a long time on our real estate search. We looked at this building to purchase, and the day we looked at it, someone else got it under contract. And we had been told, you know, oh, hey, you know, don't worry about it. We're not sure this guy is going to close this deal. Like, this building might be back on the market. We say, okay, well, you know, we're not going to wait on that. We're going to look at some other places.
Right.
We had another building that we had under contract, and then that ended up falling through for other reasons, and so we were back looking for a place to go, and it turns out this building had gone back on the market like people said it would, but it basically didn't go back on the market because the day the other contract fell through, Andy Zimmerman, who's done a lot of development downtown, swooped in and got it under contract himself, and he had heard we were looking for a location, so he contacted us, see if we were interested in leasing, and we were like, we absolutely were. We loved this location. It's really important for us to be, we wanted to be next to the Greenway.
Right.
One of the very first things we wanted to look at was on the, along the Greenway. It was literally what we were trying to find way back when we first started looking. And so Andy came to us, and we said, yeah, absolutely, we're interested in signing a lease. We don't want the whole building. We'll take two of the three bays and the little warehouse. He was like, well, that's good. That's what I had in mind. I've got some restaurant tenants next door. And he told us a bunch of the concepts, not anyone behind the concepts. And we were like, oh, that one sounds awesome when he told us about their concept. And then he told us who it was. And we were like, that sounds great. Like, hopefully that's who you end up with. And yeah, they ended up being our neighbors, and we're happy neighbors. We love having them next door. We had zero interest in running a kitchen, but now, like, we've got this little, that door over there slides open, and there's a little bar. You can kind of order to-go food straight from them from inside our tap room.
Yeah.
And that created some zoning issues. We had to write a really long letter to the zoning and the ABC commission about, like, the intended use for that door.
Yeah, so people can't go there like willy-nilly and cross.
No, it's there is literally a bar built there. Like, you cannot pass underneath it. Yeah, it's like just a little to-go counter. And drinks can't go back and forth. We're on separate ABC permits. They serve liquor, we don't. Like, you can't get beer from here and take it there. You can't get anything from here and take it here. And that hadn't been as much of a problem lately, but like, when we both first opened up, we opened a few weeks before they did, but once we were both open and we were both packed all the time, like, that was really tough to deal with, because like, people would just walk out our front door with a beer in their hands, and you're like, no, like, they're a separate business, I'm really sorry, like, we have separate ABC permits, like, you know,
just enjoy your food, stuff. Don't mess this up for everybody else.
But like, you know, we've talked about trying to do some collaboration beers and stuff, but like, it's just been really, like I said, really tough to, I feel like we've been open for 8 months. I'm just now starting to feel like I can breathe again.
Yeah, I was going to say, you like, guys are both starting new
businesses. I don't just have like chest pain all the time, like super stressed out. Like, I'm still super stressed out all the time actually, but I'm just better at dealing with that, I think. So it's just, so we're going to try and do some stuff like that. But like, now they serve tacos from 12 to 4 on Saturdays. Like, they'll do different taco specials every week before they open up. So, like, there's some food in here during the day. And, like, otherwise, we pretty much have the same hours. They're closed on Sundays. We're not. We're open on Sundays. But otherwise, it's pretty much the same hours. So, like, you can always come in here. And we have an open food policy. You can bring food from wherever. You can get food delivered. You can bring food from home. Deep Roots is across the street. Yeah. You can get food from Deep Roots. I eat at Deep Roots like once a day. I eat there all the time. Highly recommend it. But yeah, like, it's really nice having them there because, like, it's just super easy for people to eat.
Yeah, and I'm sure, like, you guys kind of drive each other's businesses a little bit. You know, people go and they have to wait for a table. They pop over here for a beer.
Sometimes, you know, they're slow and we got people in here and they're getting food orders, and sometimes we're slow. Mm-hmm. And like you said, like, they're like, oh, I'm waiting on my table. Oh, this is a cool place. I didn't know you were here. And
grab a beer, you know, and hang out.
Yeah. And people have figured out that we're separate businesses now. That was tricky at first, because it was like, no, like, you know, they're a restaurant, we're a brewery.
We're just friends.
We didn't anticipate the windows being as confusing as they were at first to people, but, like, we thought it'd be cool. Like,
yeah, it is cool. I definitely like it. You could sit inside there and see all the way into where you're
in the brewery. Yeah. So, like, that was another point in construction where they told us we were going to have explosion-proof glass until we have a sprinkler system put in. And they're like, oh, okay, you're good. So,
all right.
That was fun.
I bet. That's an interesting
always
thing
negotiating
to hear.
With inspectors and stuff. Brewers, like, when other people who are in the brewing industry come in, they're always shocked to see that our boiler is not in a separate room. And that's because we have a sprinkler system.
Yeah.
We have a sprinkler system, so they told us we didn't have to have the boiler in a separate room.
Okay.
So, as if that would stop the boiler from exploding.
Rules, regulations.
Yeah, you gotta follow that crap.
Yeah.
There's lots of them
when you're a brewer.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hoops you have to swim through, man.
It's a very highly regulated industry.
Just barely scratching the surface at looking at what you have to do to start a brewery is incredibly daunting in and of itself. I can't imagine actually having to see everything through like that, man. That's an undertaking, man.
It's been satisfying, though. It's nice, like,
sure.
You work really long hours, and, like, on top of that, you know, anytime you start a business, it's pretty likely that you yourself won't be very financially secure for a while.
Right.
But, like, you know, I'll work a really long day and I'll be finishing up and people are down here drinking beer and having fun. It's like, well, that's cool. Like, at least this is what I'm doing this for in theory. Like, so people can have a nice beer and enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
But
you definitely created an awesome space to kind of settle in and hang out. Like, there's this big long couch here on the wall. Like, it's hard sometimes to find a good space to go with, like, a larger group of friends. And you have these big tables and stuff, like, you can settle and you can hang. And
we wanted it to be a really comfortable place to come drink and hang out, not necessarily like a loud bar. Like, right. I mean, it does get loud in here when it's crowded, but that's because it's a crowded bar. But, like, more in the sense that, like, you know, people, well, we don't serve liquor, but in the atmosphere kind of way, that we're not the kind of bar where people are going to be coming and, like, give me some Jaeger bombs. Like, you know, people aren't coming out here to come get wasted and, you know,
you guys aren't Jakes.
Do whatever. Yeah. So it's like, we wanted it to be a nice place where you can come hang out, bring your food and hang out on one of these tables, or, like, we got all these soft seating and, like, you can move it around. Like you said, if you got a big group and you got 12 people who want to sit in the armchairs over there, you can move around and make a big circle of 12 armchairs.
You got some board games over here. I like that.
Yeah.
It's been killing me because I'm a huge board game nerd and I haven't had time to, like, to get us some good board games that I actually want to sit down and play. I haven't played a board game since my daughter was born, and we used to play them literally every night, so.
We're big on board games. Yeah. This big round table here in the back,
that's a good one.
Seems perfect.
I've been trying to get board game nights going here, but, like, it's also a thing that, like, it'd be a board game night where I'm hanging out and teaching people new games, but I haven't played a board game in, like, a year and a half. Right. So it's like, I used to play them all the time, so.
That's something we'd be interested in.
Yeah.
Even both of our podcasts would be interested in how you guys do that.
It's just the four of us. Let's play some board games. That's
like a great idea. We can switch gears. I got some board games in the office.
Because, like, the two hosts on Name Redacted, they're big board game fans, like all of us are.
What are y'all playing lately? Not to mix your podcast too much.
We're kind of in the same place trying to get this podcast network launched. Behind in my board games.
We play a lot of like role-playing games as well.
Yeah, we do play a lot of role-playing games. We've got a... the other podcast has a Star Wars D20. Or not D20, actually, but Star Wars, like, the role-playing game.
I've got the original Star Wars role-playing game source book on my bookshelf at home, so...
Nice.
I haven't seen the new movie yet.
We're playing Edge of the Empire, if you heard about that. It's all about... It's not Force-sensitive. It's all, like... rogues and like
bounty hunters and that kind of stuff. Sounds perfect. Sounds glorious.
And then they play Dungeons and Dragons, and then we have a zombie.
We've got a zombie role playing game we do as well. Most of our board game energy has been in role playing games.
Pen and paper stuff, more
traditional tabletop kind of stuff. But
not to divert you into your other podcast.
We like to hear about the kind of stuff that you're into too. Yeah. And I think people at home like to know like kind of the culture behind places that we go to.
Oh yeah. Well, there's not too many board games happening in here yet.
Yeah. Well, hopefully there will be.
Someday. Yeah. In theory.
We will come on a weekday night and...
Oh, we'll totally come and play some, like, Risk or...
Yeah.
Some King of Tokyo.
I was going to teach our bar manager Alien Frontiers. Y'all ever played that one?
No.
No.
It's like a fancy Yahtzee, I guess. Okay. It's like a dice rolling game. It's like dice rolling and worker placement, where your dice are like your workers.
Yeah.
It's like you can roll, if you roll 1, 2, 3, you can put them here, like you'd roll doubles. Okay. You can do different things depending on how you roll your dice, and you got to build a little space colony.
That sounds pretty fun. It's kind of like a Cosmic Encounter that we
play.
Like similar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is fun, too. But,
Like Smash Up. I don't know if you ever played Smash Up.
I've heard of it.
That's a lot of fun.
We have
anything that's come out in the last 2 years, I've probably heard of, but have never.
It's like
my wife and I used to play lots of board games, and we still talk about like, hey, we're gonna set up this toddler-free space in the other room where we can just leave a board game set up. But right now, it's got like a big Lego on it that I haven't finished.
So speaking of family, how is it working? You said you work with your two brothers.
So the other owners of the business are my two brothers, Will and Britt, my wife, Nicole, and my parents, Britt and Alice. My parents do not work here, but they're owners. And so my two brothers and my wife all work here. And, like, I'd say it was a lot harder at first. We've all gotten a lot more used to it lately, but, like, I don't know, it's great. Like, sometimes it's really frustrating, but most of the time you're like, it's cool, I get to hang out with my brothers more than I used to, if we're working, and it's stressful, but, like, I get to hang out with them, and, like, got to bring my daughter to work a lot. I still bring my daughter to work a lot. Like, she hangs out in the tap room all the time during the day before we open, and sometimes after we open, she'll just crawl into a stranger's lap. Hey, how's it going? You having some beer? But, it's great. You know, I get to hang out. I get to see my wife a lot. We both work together, so, like, I don't know. Some days, like, you'd think it would make it easier when it's stressful, but it's not. Because, like, I guess it's hard to put it diplomatically. Let's see. Your inhibitions in a work environment normally would be a lot higher than when you're talking to your brothers. You know,
right? Yeah, because yeah. Yeah, you're so much comfortable talking.
It's like let's keep it professional, but then it's your brothers. You know, I've known my brothers my whole life, so you know, I'll say things to them that I might not have necessarily said to a coworker. So, but I think we've gotten past all the difficulties of working as a family and more embracing the positive aspects. So.
That's great.
That's good.
Yeah.
I like totally brain farted him when I was gonna start.
Jeff like opened his mouth and went, like, yeah,
there it goes.
Nothing. Goodbye thoughts.
So what are you guys thinking about doing like in the future? Do you guys wanna do, I don't know, do you wanna get more tanks in here? Do you wanna do barrels?
We can hit 5,000 barrels per year in this facility. We are going to do some barrel aging and stuff. I want to find the right barrels. I don't want to do bourbon barrels. Like, those are easy to get, but they're boring. I don't know. Like, bourbon barrel beers, they're fine. Like, I'm not a big fan of them because I can't drink bourbon. Bad experience when I was younger, and it ruined me for life. But I want to do something a little more interesting with the barrels. We talked to a guy who was making hot sauce in barrels. Oh, and when I was like, can I get some of those barrels from you? He had no idea why I would want them, and I was like, no, like it's a barrel aging beer thing, and like, I don't want anything vinegar based because then like acetobacter and stuff in there. I don't want anything vinegar based, but like hot sauce barrels, that sounds fun. But, like, you know, stuff like that. We're trying to do something a little
different.
You don't want to do any like sour or anything.
We got a Goza. We're going to start doing test batch. We did a test batch of a Goza. We're going to start releasing test batches. Our goal is every Thursday in the tap room. We're going to put a new test batch on, or we're probably going to start doing some casks or something too. That was our ice maker. People, when they're trying to get in, are a lot more obvious than that. We're doing a Goza though, and we're hoping to start putting those test batches out on Thursdays, and just some light sour beers, but sour beers aren't something I have a huge interest in.
Okay.
And I'm trying to develop that interest naturally rather than just chasing something that
is popular.
Seems to be a trend, you know? It's not like, oh, we need to brew a sour beer because that's what other people are doing. It's like, no, let's brew the sour beer that we want to make.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially because you want to keep, you want to keep your fingerprint on everything. You want it to taste like a beer that's a prior beer.
Yeah, so right now, just some lactobacillus and some gozas, basically, right now.
Cool.
But we'll see. We got a lot of really weird ideas, though. We'd use some local ingredients and stuff like that.
That's awesome that you guys use local ingredients.
Yeah, we do whenever we can. Like, we try and use fresh whole fruit and vegetables and stuff and process it ourselves, which is one of the advantages to being smaller. There's not a lot of advantages to being a small brewery, but that's one of them, is that you can do stuff like that, where it's like, you know, someone trying to brew a 300 barrel batch of it, it's a lot more processing than, you know, we do 300 pounds of strawberries in a 10 barrel batch. It's like, I don't think they want to process that for a 300 barrel batch, you know?
Can really smell these strawberries.
Yeah, that strawberry beer is really good.
It's been a pretty popular one. Yeah, we do pretty well with that.
And I noticed that for the most part, a lot of your stuff is pretty sessionable. There's a couple that are...
We've only got two that are over 7%, two that are over 6%. We got two that are at 6%, and only two that... We got one that's 7.1 and one 8.2. And our pumpkin stout that we did was 8.8, or 8.9. It was sub 9.
Do you usually go for more sessionable?
These days I do. When I was... A couple years ago, it would have been like, give me the highest gravity thing you got. But now it's like, I work all the time. I've got a kid. Like, I'd never sleep. Like, I can't I just can't drink high alcohol beers anymore. And I've got a keg of our red IPA at home, which is 8.2. And that's just been, that was a big mistake to take that keg home. It's like, I want to have, you know, two beers and relax at night. But then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I shouldn't have had those two beers.
See, that's nicer, though. Like, you go and you look at the menu and you realize, like, yeah, I can try three beers and I'm not going to be, like, stumbling home at the end of the
day.
Yeah, that's, like, what he was saying about how he wants this place to be, like, a place you could hang out. So, of course, you don't want 10% beers there and you have one and you're done for the night.
You want to remember your night with your friends.
We got some plans for some big beers, though. Okay. Sometimes you just want to do it big because that's, you know, you're like, let's see how, it's like pushing your system to the max.
Yeah.
When you're on a commercial scale like this, it's like, how much grain
can I put in here?
Can I really load into this mash tun? And then, like, ooh, how much candy sugar can I add to the kettle to really, you know, let's see.
Boost the gravity.
Yeah. Let's see if I can force myself to buy a different Brix hydrometer. Like, I have to get into a different scale. It's like, this one only goes to 30 Brix. So, we got some plans.
Speaking in terms of, like, that, what kind of, this is more nerdy, but like, what kind of yeast do you guys use?
We've only got two yeasts in the brew house right now. So we use a regular old American ale yeast, the dry yeast, Safe Ale 05.
Okay.
Like, that's wonderful stuff. Like, when I first started homebrewing, dry yeast was kind of looked down on, but now it's like, you can get so many different kinds of dry yeast. They're so much better at packaging it.
It's
like,
pretty easy,
we get
yeah.
great results from the Safe Ale 05. And the only other yeast we use right now is the White Labs, I think it's 530, the Abbey Ale, whatever the Abbey Ale is, the Abbey Ale yeast from White Labs. And those are the only two we use on the 10 barrel batches right now.
Yeah, because you guys can't, like, I guess you could maybe go from tank to tank.
We can. It's not my favorite thing to do, but yeah, like we probably go 5 or 6 generations on the Abbey Ale yeast.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Do you just use the SO5 ones?
Sometimes we'll do it twice, but like, yeah, I mean, dry yeast is pretty cheap, so it's like,
yeah.
You get pretty good attenuation out of it and stuff like that, so like, sometimes I'll reharvest it, but other times it just goes down, you know, get rid of it.
Yeah.
Is there anything you'd want people to know about what's going on here that you might not be able to talk about otherwise?
No, just that we're gonna, you know, 2016, it's like, 2015 was a crazy year for us. We got the business open. Like, in terms of my personal life, it was my first full calendar year as a parent. Like, it felt like 2015 just felt like one of those years that you were constantly just trying to keep your head above water. And now that we've made it through a year and we're open, we're still here. We made it 8 months. So we're feeling a lot more confident about like branching out even more, like I said, into stuff like Agoza. We're going to start doing like some small bottling releases. Like get some, you know, counter pressure bottle filler and do some bottling runs and get those out there and stuff like that. But in terms of specifically like new beers, like really it's the Goza. I did a black IPA today, but with coffee. But we'll see if that turns into something that we actually scale up. I want it to, but I don't know if we will. I don't know. I'm terrible at self-promotion. I'm one of those people that's like my own worst critic. It's like I drink my beer and I'm like, people buy this.
Because back to your days.
Yeah. It's like, I'm never satisfied.
That's not
satisfied
a bad way to be, though. I mean,
it's like, means you're always trying to get better. Yeah. And, like, in that respect, like, there's tons of things that it's like, I wish I was better about this in the brewery. Like, you know, water treatment, stuff like that. Yeah. So, there's lots of things that you can always improve on in your brewing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah,
definitely, that's constantly what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I guess thanks for having us here.
Yeah, thanks. This is,
thanks for coming.
A wonderful guest. I can't wait to try some more beer in the future.
And we can have some more beer now.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Not complaining.
Yeah.
For sure.
Great. Yeah, you don't have anything else?
No, it was wonderful. I was happy to be on. I'm always happy to talk about beer.
Are you guys on social media or anything? Where can people find out more about you guys?
Thank you. This is my wife. If she had listened to this, like, what were you doing?
Social media. That's my role, you know, too.
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that good stuff. We're mostly active on Facebook and Instagram.
And it's under
Prior Brewing Company.
Okay, and that's
PREYER.
Okay, there you go.
Perfect. Prior Brewing Company.
Cool.
Well, we'll be
check them out. That'll be in the show notes too. Yeah.
We'll link all those
your social medias to it. Yeah.
Great.
We'll tag you in all of our things, and we'll get board game night started.
Yeah, there you go. We'll start doing some board games.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Cheers.